Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
Today, I'm announcing we'll be issuing safer at home order tomorrow.
Each polling place will get at least two of the liter bottles of the solution and then four spray bottles.
Your local units of government, your towns, your cities, your villages, and your county are doing everything we can to make this as minimally intrusive to you as possible.
I want to thank parents for their work around this health crisis that we're having right now. We know that these are unprecedented times.
I'm Steve Walters.
Yeah, Ross.
This is Rewind for a week that the news just keeps happening. A few minutes ago, Governor Tony Evers called for a special session of the legislature. We will get to that, I promise. But first, I want to talk about the order issued by the federal court judge, William Conley, yesterday that said, I'm not going to cancel the April 7 election, next Tuesday election. But let's walk through, JR, what that said. So, and then I'm going to give you a chance because you just heard from a clarification. So, Judge Conley's order. He refused to block Tuesday's election, as I said, but he said that the record number, more than 1.1 million of absentee ballots, could be counted through April 13th, number one. Number two, that he extended by 24 hours until 5 p.m. today, the extension of the deadline to request an absentee ballot. He allowed self-declared confined absentee voters to waive the requirement that they vote in the presence of witnesses. Now, JR, you were telling me before we went on air that there was just an important clarification. Can you summarize that, please?
Yeah, essentially, Conley's ruling pushes back the deadline for the ballots to April 13th to be received. Don't forget the election was going to be Tuesday, April 7th. He is now saying, clarifying at the request of the Elections Commission, that they cannot release unofficial returns prior to 4 p.m. April 13th, the deadline for the ballots to come in. That's important because we were all wondering after the decision came down this week, well, what's this mean? Are we going to have a normal election night where we're going to have returns out and we'll see, like, the Supreme Court race, for example, who's leading in that after the initial count? And then there'll be a race to find those who have absentee ballots out for the next 6 days.
Yes.
Tells us that we're not going to have that. We're basically going to get a count on April 13th, and that's where we're going to find out basically the results of the election.
Okay, now let's go to what that means. And JR, two bullet points here. First, it means that there will be in person, at least at this moment, there will be in-person statewide voting on Tuesday, although at fewer polling places because of the shortage of poll workers. We'll talk about that when we talk about the governor's call for special session. And as you said, the winner of close elections won't be known until mid-April, right?
Yeah, because we won't see any count until then at all. Now, in looking at this decision, Republicans have complained that while Conley said he was not moving the election date, in effect, to them, he has, because before, you had to have absentee ballots in by 8 p.m. on election day. Now he pushed that back by 6 days. To Republicans, in effect, Conley has pushed back the election date to April 13th.
Okay, but I also want to note that, as you reported, the Republicans said, we are immediately going to appeal this. So you have the ability right now in real time to check for recent news developments, and we don't have any decision from the Court of Appeals, do we? But it could come at any time?
Last night already the state and national Republican parties had filed a notice of appeal with the court. There's already a plethora of filings coming into the appeals court in Chicago about this case. I'm just waiting to see when we're going to have briefs, or if we're going to have an injunction of Conley's decision. Republicans had asked Conley, if you're going to make an order, please stay it until we have a chance to appeal it. He said no, because the big sweeping changes he's making, i.e. the pushing back of the date to April 13th, doesn't really take effect until April 7th, so there's time to appeal this. So basically, I am checking electronic court records every hour on the hour, trying to see if we have a new filing or decision coming out from the court in this case.
Okay, now you and I read this Conley court decision. I found it absolutely fascinating. I want to quote two sentences from it, JR. This is from Judge William Conley. As much as the court would prefer that the Wisconsin legislature and governor consider the public health ahead of any political considerations, that does not appear in the cards, nor is it appropriate for a federal district court to act as the state's chief health official by taking that stop for them. So, JR, at a lot of points in the opinion, he said this public health threat is real, but it's not up to me, a federal judge, to stop a state election. Any PSs on that?
He, both in that decision and in a conference, teleconference on Wednesday, made clear his dissatisfaction with both Governor Tony Evers and Republican lawmakers for not moving his election on their own. Question why they weren't taking this situation more seriously, why they were intent on going ahead with this election when a dozen states have moved their dates. He made clear his unhappiness that they weren't doing this and were forcing him to step in and take these actions.
Okay, now as alluded to earlier, let's talk about at 1:15, 15 minutes before he briefed Wisconsin residents on the COVID-19 threat, the governor's office issued a press release calling for a special session, and I'm reading from the press release, to do three things: allow an all-mail election, send a ballot to every registered voter who had not requested one as of May 19th, and extend the time for these ballots to be received to May 26th. In other words, moving a final election date to May 26th. He wants the legislature to come back 4 p.m. tomorrow, Saturday. There are a number of problems with that. Logistics, you have several legislators over 60. They're at risk. They're all over the state. They have tested virtual voting systems, but I don't think they're there yet. And I don't think leaders have copies of the laws. All this is saying, JR, impossible, not likely?
Extremely unlikely, like 0% that the Republicans will come in tomorrow and have a special session. Like, look, let's look at the kind of the progression of where Evers has been on this. Repeatedly, the initial weeks of the pandemic, he said we were going to take precautions to keep voters and workers safe, but the election must go on because we have these dozens, hundreds of local offices that they have an expiration date, that if you don't have the election April 7th, you then leave those offices open, possibly, and you don't have people in leadership positions during a pandemic, that would be a problem. So from that, last Friday, he called on lawmakers to change the law to have an all-mail, basically, election, mail absentee ballots to all registered voters. That was a week ago today. He went from that to, on Tuesday, his administration filed a front of the court brief in these combined lawsuits about the April election, recommending a federal judge extend various deadlines for absentee ballots. Late Wednesday, he said in a statement that he'd have changed election date if he had the sole authority to do so. And then late yesterday, he said it was great news that voters will have more time to request and submit absentee ballots after Conley's decision, to today, now calling this special session, which he cannot force lawmakers to act. He can call a special session, but can't make them take up a bill saying he wants election day changed. Now, what's happened in that time period? He's gotten increasing pressure, both in the state and nationally, over the election date. And you have all kinds of Democrats in the state and nationally who have spoken out about this decision and complained about the going for this election, light of what's going on. So the question is, has that influenced where Evers has been about this question about the election date on Tuesday?
Okay, but when the Evers team were asked what changed, the governor's legal counsel, Ryan Nielsen-Stoon, said two things. The situation on the ground, meaning the additional positives of COVID, are more serious, especially in southeast Wisconsin, number one. Number two, the alarming number of consolidation and reallocation of polling places. That's been a big difference in 2 weeks. JR, I want to ask you about the governor's answer to the last question today. What happens if the legislature takes no action? And I'm quoting the governor, we'll be looking at whatever action we can take. Is it possible he would issue an executive order postponing an election?
It's an excellent question. What could be next? Because he said over and over again, he does not have the sole authority to change the election date. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I've seen conflicting opinions about how far he could go, but the governor said over and over, he cannot do this on his own. Does that mean going to court? Does that mean trying to do it on your own? Don't forget, we're now setting up an election that's going to be conducted during quite a confusing time. You have not just the court decision from Thursday from Conley. You have the appeal that could come down at any time with a possible stay, the Conley decision. You have Evers, who's been kind of moving his position on those elections should go forward on Tuesday. You have Democrats in the state and nationally calling for a delay. You have groups calling for delay. I mean, if you're a voter, what do you think? How do you know how to navigate the election right now? And oh, by the way, if we end up with a Supreme Court race that is tooth and nails close, after the April 13th count, as of today, don't forget that could change with an appeals court decision. But if you have a very narrow Supreme Court race, if you're the losing candidate, you have grounds right now to file a lawsuit, challenge the results. Now, I'm not predicting that would be a successful lawsuit, but I can, in talking to people in the last week, I've heard from multiple people saying they can see a lawsuit being filed about this election because of how it's been conducted.
Okay, and I want to go back to the governor's last answer. We'll be looking at whatever action we can take after 4 o'clock tomorrow, when neither of us expect that the legislature to come back for the special session.
Keep your eyes on Twitter this weekend.
Absolutely. If this were a normal rewind before an election, we'd be talking about what's up next Tuesday. Supreme Court, Milwaukee County Exec, Mayor of Milwaukee, Court of Appeals judges, hundreds of local races, but this is not a run-up to a local election.
And a presidential primary, Steve. Don't forget that one.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thanks, J.R. Okay, let's move on to topic two. It wasn't a real surprise. We've been wondering. Officially, the DNC said that Milwaukee, July 13 through 16, Democratic National Convention, let's push it to the week of August 17th. Now, the COVID-19 emergency forces the party to shift it from July to August 17th. Pfizer Forum, local civic leaders, the hospitality industry, Mayor Barrett, we can accommodate however many would be coming in the week of August 17th. However, JR, there are no details, and senior Democratic officials say, you know, we're wondering how many days to meet, programming. I get the feeling that even August 17th is far from set in stone. You?
When I asked people about this kind of decision, the feedback I got was generally that this may be the best case scenario of a bad situation for Milwaukee. Because remember, this is Milwaukee's chance to shine, prove it can pull off a convention. So if you had a scenario in which the convention was just flat out canceled, because remember, they're going to go in July, whereas the Republicans are in August, that would have been just not good, according to Democrats, because you'd have them pulling out of Wisconsin with their national convention, Trump probably going ahead in August if it's safe. By moving it back to August now, you're right in line with the Republican convention.
You're 1 week before the Republicans in Charlotte, excuse me.
The reason it was moved up was to allow Democrats, the nominee, to access general election funds earlier in this fight against Trump. Now you're pushing it back to being right there with the Republicans. So if the Republicans can't, if you can't go, like the Republicans can't go, if you have to pare back dramatically, likely they have to pare back dramatically. You're not going to get an uneven response, most likely, people kind of speculate, by having them so closely together. Now, there are still challenges for Milwaukee. There's no guarantee we're going to have 50,000 visitors in the city of Milwaukee come summer. Will people feel safe to be in the Pfizer's auditorium? Will we end up having a virtual convention anyway? You know, Milwaukee, like every community in Wisconsin, is going to be hurting before long because of drops in revenue from sales tax, all the stuff going on with the economy, which is really hitting a hard time.
Right.
Milwaukee could use a shot in the arm that this would bring, especially the hospitality industry. We both know Milwaukee is a city of festivals in the summer. There's like one almost every weekend.
Summerfest is already delayed. Yeah.
Canceled left and right or postponed. So they could really use this shot in the arm. Will it deliver a boost to the hospitality industry in Milwaukee at a needed time? You know, that's still to be determined right now.
Okay. I want you to parse the two official statements from Tom Perez and Joe Sominese. Excuse me. Tom Perez, DNC chair. Leadership means being able to adapt, and that's exactly what our party is doing. Milwaukee has been an incredible partner, especially over the past few weeks as we've confronted this global crisis. We couldn't be more committed to highlighting Wisconsin as a key battleground state. Hold your fire, JR. The smartest approach is to take additional time to monitor how the situation unfolds. We will continue to monitor the situation and follow the advice of healthcare professionals and emergency responders. That's the convention CEO. Parse it for me.
There is no guarantee right now, as we sit here, that there will be a convention in Milwaukee in August. There just isn't. I mean, we just don't know what's going to be like come August in terms of the health situation. You know, the governor's order goes through April 24th. What's going to be after that? There are people talking about whether this is going to be controlled by May, by June, by the end of this year. There's really no known right now. This is a new situation. There's no guarantee we're going to have a convention in Milwaukee come August.
Okay, new topic. Earlier in the week, the governor and Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald were talking about getting together. Could they agree on a COVID response package? And listen to the governor. He at one point says, we hope Republican legislators say, take the bait. That's a pretty interesting term. And then Speaker Voss, Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, on the logistics of a virtual session, please.
We've asked all our agencies to take a look at what they believe they need. We have been briefing legislative offices all along on those issues, and hopefully we could get somebody to take the bait, frankly, and have us let's have a legislative session so we can talk about it. Thus far, that hasn't happened. But we continue to work with the legislature to make them understand the needs that exist at the state level to make sure that we serve the people in Wisconsin the best way possible.
Is there any possibility that you could meet in extraordinary session more than once?
I certainly think it's possible, but I think our goal is to come in and do a single day, a single piece of legislation that covers everything. And then if we need to come back weeks or months from now, of course, we're always open to that if there's a real need, but we're trying to be comprehensive, knowing how challenging it is to get people together and do it safely. That's why I think we're trying to do it a single time and have an agreement that's broad and bipartisan.
Yeah, in the Senate, we're working with the technology that is available to us. LTSB has been putting in many, many hours to try and fine-tune the system that Senator Roth, the President of the Senate, has been kind of leading the charge on. I know he's been discussing this with the Minority Leader, Senator Schilling, and we have that test run tomorrow. It'll be very interesting to see if all the bugs have been worked out. I've been told that we're in a really good position, and we hope that that'll be the solution to trying to bring the state Senate in a safe way and make sure that both senators and staff are still able to make sure that the social distancing is something that we are adhering to.
I want to make clear, earlier we were talking about the governor and Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald going back and forth on the election. This is a new topic. Can they agree on a package in response to the COVID-19 crisis? So let's just review. The governor, as you heard, said, I think we'll be able to work it out. But then in their press conference this week, Mr. Fitzgerald, Mr. Voss said, the 1 week waiting period for jobless benefits, we agree, should be waived. And then I heard Speaker Voss say, temporarily. But they need to see the details. They need to see the Fiscal Bureau workouts and printouts on the federal $2.2 trillion with a T package. And the federal package may allow the governor to, without legislative oversight, spend $1.9 billion. That was a letter that the legislative leaders issued last week. And they both said, we hope to hold a virtual session within weeks. JR, now we talked about the back and forth on the election. Where do you think they'll be on a COVID response package?
Good question. This $2.2 billion to the state from the federal government, of that $1.9 billion right to state government, about $300 million to the city of Milwaukee, Milwaukee County, and Dane County.
Yes.
Because they're the three municipalities that are more than 500,000
people. More than 500,000.
Evers released two bills, one on Saturday last weekend, one earlier this week. Both have hefty price tags, north of $1 billion. You add it all up, it's not quite clear how it all be paid for, how it works with the federal funds. We have a rainy day fund, about $655 million, give or take, right now. We're going to have cratering state resources because of the slowdown for businesses. So how's that all going to play out is a great unknown. Voss and Fitzgerald said they wanted to see how this federal package works and do more of a state wraparound. So they are not committing to the vision that Governor Evers is putting forward right now. The question kind of becomes, okay, can they reach some kind of bipartisan deal? You know, on the one side, Voss and Fitzgerald, on the other, you know, the governor, Gordon Hintz, Jennifer Schilling, can they work out something that can go quickly? Because the Senate's working on a virtual session. It's different in the assembly. Robin hasn't quite laid out, Robin Voss, the speaker, what exactly that was going to look like over there. They're trying to nail down those details, but I don't get the impression they're going to have everybody on Zoom or Skype, because it's one thing for 33 people to try and do that. Imagine 99 members trying to talk via that method. It's going to be an interesting challenge logistically just to meet the assembly. Or will they bring them in shifts into the chamber, how to keep everybody 6 feet away? I mean, it's all kinds of questions I got to figure out to make sure they can do this safely, but also allow for democracy to continue.
But, JR, the news has been dominated, of course, by the election, Tuesday's election, and COVID-19. What about the 100-plus bills passed by the Assembly that are pending in the Senate? When do you think we might see action on those?
Good question. You know, there's a memo circulated this week about how those bills could basically come back to life because the session technically ended last week. But there's a way to bring those bills back so they can get things done they want to. But nobody knows. I mean, like, we're still trying to figure out when they can meet this special session, our extraordinary session on the COVID-19 response. What happens with those other bills? The Senate can take them all at the same time. They work out some kind of deal. They have like bipartisan agreement, voice votes, and fly through them. You know, I really don't know.
Because we heard Speaker Voss say, we'd like to bring people back just for one session day. Okay. Last weekend, as you said, JR, the governor released his first package. That didn't go anywhere. I think on Wednesday, he released another package. And I want to go through some of the bullet points. And then I'm going to ask you, I think you put up a figure of what these would cost. So bear me out. The governor's revised legislative package increased funding for Medicaid providers who responded to the health emergency, reimbursed health care providers for uncompensated care costs, supplemental payments to child care providers shut by the health emergency, increase the earned income tax credit for low-income families, waive interest and penalties on delinquent property taxes, two more, Wisconsin Housing and Economic Development Association Fund to provide 6 months of support, 6 months of support to prevent single-family foreclosures, providing refinancing options, and finally, Wisconsin Economic Development Corp grants for small businesses and workers. I think you scored this, JR. What does it score?
Well, we went through and tried to add up on our own. We got about $388 million, roughly, but there's also $100 million in general fund support and borrowing in there. So depends how you want to add that in the price tag. But that's on top of a $704 million bill, according to the LFB analysis. So we're talking some real money here. I just don't know if it's going to go anywhere because, like, I get the impression that Voss and Fitzgerald are going to pick pieces of this that are palatable to them, including their bill. But I don't, right now, from my conversations with people, I don't envision the legislature passing these bills as is. Just no way. For example, the first bill the governor put out, there's a provision that would suspend evictions for failure to pay rent. I just, talking to Republicans, they just don't see a way that they would agree to interfering with private contracts in a health emergency. They just don't see that's just not part of their philosophy. So those things, I just don't get the impression they're going to go anywhere.
And the governor initially asked for broader powers, he and all future governors, to declare emergencies, right?
I believe so, something like that. And that's another thing. That there is this kind of rub among Republican lawmakers about the extent of the governor's powers, how to kind of have legislative oversight. I've already seen legislation kicked around to try and address that in the future. It would be difficult, however, to rein those powers in the middle of a health emergency. So how that could play out, we'll see. Right. But there's definitely some chafing going on because of the expansive powers the governor has, and there's no real oversight. And oh, by the way, that federal money, that $1.9 billion, from what LFB says, the Fiscal Bureau, there is no legislative oversight of that money. So Evers can kind of spend it as he wants. There's another thing chafing some lawmakers of, we don't have a say in how this is going to go.
Right. And he was asked today, what are you going to do with the $1.9 billion? And he said, discussions are only beginning. Okay, new subject. I want to wrap together three developments that also are related to COVID-19. We are opening in Wisconsin isolation centers. The Madison Lowell Center could house 137. These are isolation centers for people with positive COVID-19 or awaiting the results of the testing so they wouldn't infect others. A Super 8 in Milwaukee could house 110. And I found it intriguing in that press release. State officials are discussing with local regional officials how they could open their own isolation centers. Two more COVID-19 developments I want to highlight. The governor asked President Trump for a statewide emergency declaration, and the governor and the Office of the Commissioner of Insurance told health insurance companies they should let small businesses keep furloughed. Keep on their health insurance plans. Thank you. Those employees working less than 30 hours a week, they should be able to stay on their employer health plans. Any PSs on those three, JR?
No, I mean, the governor's orders, generally speaking, have been about trying to help people who have been impacted by basically the economic shutdown going on or near shutdown going on because of these orders, the health pandemic. It's all about stuff that would help people who are dealing with that the impact of those things.
Okay, let's quickly go through the Marquette University Law School poll, because it was the first one that took the temperature of Wisconsin respondents on the COVID-19 crisis. First, do you approve President Trump's handling of the COVID-19 emergency? 51% yes, 46% no. How about Governor Evers' handling of the health of the pandemic emergency? 76% yes, 17% no. Quickly, JR, that's a percentage point difference of 25%. Your thoughts on that?
It's a rally around the flag effect, but Evers is less defined than Trump is. So Evers gets more of a bump because people generally like the guy. Generally think he's doing a decent job before this. They like what he's doing. Therefore, it helps boost him. Whereas Trump is so defined and so polarizing, he gets less of a bump out of the narrow majority who think he's doing a good job handling the situation.
Okay, next question. Do you consider closing schools and businesses and restricting size of public gatherings? Excuse me, I'm too excited here about all the news. An appropriate response to public health emergencies? Overwhelming, 87% yes, 10% no. Surprising, JR?
Well, if you look at social media, sure. But, I mean, the feedback I got was that people are looking for leadership in a time of being scared. Okay. And so these things are reassuring them, and they're surviving so far. Okay. The question becomes, when they stretch into 3 and 4 and maybe more weeks beyond that, how does that play out then? Because now you're talking the real financial pain is going to hit for people who are dealing with this stuff.
Yeah. Okay. And just a short summary here. Should the July DNC in-person convention in Milwaukee be held as planned? It's not going to be held as planned. Let's move on to the next question. Favor federal government sending cash payments to each adult to offset the impact of COVID-19? 79% yes, 15% opposed. 10 seconds on that, JR. No surprise.
People like money. You know, they need it. And there are people who desperately need it. So,
okay, you got 2 minutes for your stock picks, my friend.
All right, I see we're rising. We have retirements. I now have 4 Democrats in the Senate and 1 Republican. The big surprise thing was Jennifer Schilling. This week announced she's not going to seek re-election. She's the minority leader in the state Senate.
And she's also the longest serving woman to serve as a Senate Democratic leader. But excuse me, these are your picks.
So. Third session doing that. Okay, there are a couple of things going on. One, a reality that there is not really a place for advancement. She long been viewed as somebody who could run for Ron Kind's seat when he decides he's had enough to be in Congress. That isn't really apparent anytime soon. She has 2 kids, 1 in middle school, 1 in high school. Some of those days are waning to be around her, so family consideration, and just, you know, life in the minority is not a whole lot of fun. The capitals are quite a bit of a churn. Don't forget too that her seat's one of the top targets for Republicans this fall. Dan Kopenke, who held that seat till he lost it in a recall election to Schilling back 2011, he's already going to run. He lost her by 61 votes in 2016. Now the question is going to be, how's top of the ticket going in that race, right? Because Hillary Clinton did not do well in rural areas of Wisconsin 4 years ago. We think Joe Biden's going to be the nominee come this fall. If that is the case, he's in probably going to do better than she did in rural areas. I say probably. If that happens, it helps Democrats. The generic ballot will be better for Democrats.
Okay, you got 30 seconds on your mix, my friend.
Which one I have unmixed again? Remind me.
Supreme Court.
Oh, Supreme Court race. All right, so with all these absentee ballots, tell me how you figure out what's going to happen in this race on Tuesday through the 13th. Couple of things to note. One, the formula doesn't change for winning a Supreme Court race in Wisconsin, right? I mean, it's a matter of how well the liberal candidate do in Dana Milwaukee counties, how do conservatives do in the WOW county. I mean, those things are the same. But how do you plug in the equation, right? The numbers in the equation to figure out what's going to happen. They're trying to read the tea leaves of like absentee ballot returns to see, okay, Waukesha County's got a better return rate than Dane County right now. What's that mean? We don't know. How's it going to look too after? Don't forget this. After Tuesday, there is a service right now that you can subscribe to where you can find out who's asked for an absentee ballot and who's cast it. So post Tuesday, both parties can go around and try and find those who have not returned their ballot and say, oh, by the way, you live in area X, which is beneficial to my side of the aisle. I'm maybe going to jab you a little bit and say, hey, have you turned that ballot in? Try and chase you down to do that. It is just going to be crazy. And oh, by the way, don't forget what I said before. If it's a close race, you can almost count on there being a lawsuit over the results.
Quickly, falling.
Bernie Sanders look, it looks like this guy has a ceiling in Wisconsin when paired against a likable alternative. Hillary Clinton, for multiple reasons, was not a likable alternative in 2016. He won 71, 72 counties. Fast forward to this year, in the February Marquette poll, he's about 29%. When there was, it was before the race really got thin for the Biden comeback, 29% against 5-6 candidates, one-on-one with Biden, 35%. It tells you his ceiling is around 33-35% in this race now. The caveat is, Marquette said, with the uncertainty about turnout, you got to kind of view the results a little bit of a, you know, caveat here about margin of error. But it looks like we've found out where Biden or Sanders' ceiling is when you have a viable, likable alternative, which Joe Biden seems to be for Democrats.
Okay, and you and I saw a press release from the Sanders campaign urging voters in Milwaukee and Racine to approve school bond referendums this Tuesday. Excuse my excitement. There's a lot of news. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for April 3.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.